Hello and welcome to the Southbound Sports Show. I'm your host, Richie Leahy, here with my co-host, Maddie B. I realized I normally stumble through that, so I'm trying to make it better for my own personal pride. talking a little bit in the pre-show about workouts and West Point entrance exams, I guess, what it would be called. So make sure if you want to check out the live show, see the full thing, you can go on YouTube, go live Tuesday nights at 9, other than last week because of the hurricane. But we're going to get back on schedule. Big NFL weekend, so we're going to go back to our normal NFL stuff first. I was going to hit the Steelers first, but I want to talk about the Cowboys choke job, because now it's being billed as like the biggest upset of all time in the playoffs. And I know that the Packers were a 7 seed, but realistically, I think I talked about on the show last week, I had a good feeling that the Packers were going to win anyway. So having it be magically, oh my gosh, that's the worst upset of all time, I think is a little bit over the top for me. I feel like people haven't watched the Packers, and I mean, Aaron Rodgers isn't there. They haven't been getting enough press. I've been talking about it. It seems like it comes down to coaching. If coaching opens things up, the Packers could be unstoppable. Half the time that they lost, they limited themselves. Didn't throw the ball downfield. Played like, oh, I'm afraid Love's going to turn the ball over. Let's not do it. Maybe it's a little bit related to Christian Watson. He's back. I don't remember him making like really any big plays, but they were throwing the ball over. So maybe he stretches the defense enough that it opens other things up. But come on, Cowboys. I get that it's a big upset. You're at home. You've been playing better at home all year. Just a loss. Wanting to blow up the team and the coaching is crazy to me, that they're ready to turn it over to like Dan Quinn. And how is Dan Quinn like one of the most sought after coaches? I don't get it.
Well, the impression was that Dan Quinn's been interviewing for all these other jobs, that he was distracted and like not prepared.
But it wasn't even the offense, it was the defense for the Cowboys. What, the offense ended up putting up like 30 something at the end of the game, but if they would have stopped the Packers at least like one time, isn't he the offensive coordinator? Or is he the defense?
I think he's defense.
Oh, so maybe it doesn't make sense. I was thinking he was offense. But even then, the Cowboys aren't known for their defense. Like, I thought that... I mean, I'm thinking about it, and I know that he was the head coach of the Falcons. I was thinking they're an offensive coach because of the Falcons. You know, they only drafted offensive weapons. For him to be the defensive coordinator... And I didn't even think one time that the Dallas was a great defensive team. It makes me think that he shouldn't be sought after like that. Why? What is his claim to fame? The Legion of Boom? No, he was a little bit before that.
Well, he did.
Oh, he did come back.
When Shanahan was his offensive coordinator, then Atlanta was decent.
But again, they ended up not holding the Patriots in with the 28-3 lead. He's the defensive guy. How's he not do that? That's what I don't get. If you're the Cowboys, their offense is great. I get it. Why would you turn over the reins to the defensive guy that gave up 40 points to the Packers? Like, explain it to me. I just honestly don't get it.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Because even him for other jobs, everyone's like, oh yeah, it's great. Dan Quinn, he's interviewing everywhere. Awesome. And I'm just thinking, it doesn't, like, I get that people are interviewing at different times and you have all this, but they scored 48 points. It wasn't like they were scoring them in the end. Like, in the second and third quarters when they scored most of their points. They scored 20 points in the second quarter. Basically put the game out of reach. I know the Cowboys scored 16 at the fourth quarter, but they weren't coming back. The Packers won three of the four quarters. And the Packers still scored in the fourth to make it only like a one score difference or whatever. I guess it could be one and a field goal because they went for two or whatever they were doing. But get stops. You're the defensive guy. And even if you're interviewing, I don't know how that can be like, hey, what'd you do recently? Oh, yeah, we got upset in the playoffs by the Packers. People don't even think they're supposed to be there. Like, I don't know how that wouldn't come up in the job interview. And honestly, I know that they do the coaching search now. I'm a little bit surprised that the NFL doesn't put a weight on it until after the playoffs, right? Like, you can't contact a guy until after their team's done. It's not like college where they have to go in and do recruiting. Why do they need a coach in place right now?
But I don't think there's been many scenarios where coaches have left. Like, where their team's still been in the playoffs. And they're like, oh, I'm going to take this job after the rest of the, like, it typically seems like if they're interviewing, everyone else just kind of collapses around them and then they're just done. And then if they want to move on, they're already out of the playoffs and done.
Yeah, the Lions offensive coordinator, he's the one that's being pushed for the Redskins or Commanders, whatever the hell they are. And I think it seems like it's a done deal. And it's like, they're still playing. So they're obviously not going to be like, yep, we hired him. He'll be here soon. Like, let's wait to see how they appear. Now, the Lions did get the win. And fans are booing Stafford. And everyone's like, oh yeah, Stafford, say something nice about Detroit. And then he didn't. And I'm like, why would he?
Like, they really want to make that a thing.
I know. It's like, it's weird, right? It would be, it's like an ex. Like, having an ex show up at, like, your divorce. And it's like, eh. All right, go ahead. Say something nice about them. It's like, why are you even here? I'm not even divorcing you. Like, I mean, like the previous ex, right? So, because they just lost. So it's not like a win. It's not like he's getting married. Like, if they beat the Lions and he's like, yeah, Detroit, suck it. In your face again. Like, then that would be funnier. But he looked sad. And then his wife said that he's going to be back next year. She must need the money, right? Trying to force him to work. Another year, everyone's like, yeah, he's going to retire soon. Great. Awesome. The other one that I'll talk about, the Dolphins. Like, did they just not show up either?
But I'm going to... First off, for Miami, like, that has to suck knowing if you just don't let Buffalo beat you, you're playing a home game and it's warm weather. And you're cruising. Instead, you play in the coldest game, and they're like, Buffalo's Pittsburgh, we're going to bump your game because we care about player safety. Kansas City, Miami, this is just going to be a good old-fashioned football game. Let's play it out in the cold.
Yeah, it was like negative 19 or whatever. Andy Reid had ice on his mustache. So it's like so cold out that he has ice on his mustache, and yet they don't even do anything. And we could talk about the Steelers getting postponed because everyone's throwing it at Buffalo like, oh yeah, great one, guys. Don't put a roof on your stadium. And it's like, didn't the state close it down? It wasn't like the NFL wanted to, and everyone was saying they should have just moved it. Like, no. Where are you going to move to? Pittsburgh? That's BS. If you're a Bills fan?
Well, there was speculation they were going to move it to Cleveland.
Even worse.
To be a neutral site.
Even worse, that's just right across the river or whatever, the lake, right? They're pretty close. What's the difference? Just have it in Buffalo. The weather in Cleveland, they're still doing school delays and stuff all week anyway, so you can't tell me that it's 100% better there. Like, they were just trying to screw Buffalo out of the game. Let them play it. Don't even delay it. I saw a bunch of people complaining about, well, if I paid $100 and I had to go shovel snow from my seat, it's like, then don't pay the $100. Stay home. Don't go. It's an entertainment event. Rain or shine. Like, I would rather, I mean, heck, I talked about the concert getting canceled on us. I would have rather been in the rain at the concert and had the show. And if I'm miserable, whatever, I could easily go back to my campsite, right? In Buffalo, if you don't want to go out, and I know they kept saying people died last year, yeah, in the snow. They didn't die at the Bills game. Like, the game was clean, or the field was clean, and they had that game. And I'm just like, I'm watching it, and I thought, how awesome would it have been if there was a snowstorm and the Bills Steelers ended up being like 6-3? It would have been fun to watch. And like I said, all the NFL had to do was like, hey, we'll refund some tickets or whatever if you can't go. Or what did they do? They let people claim whatever seat they wanted this year? Isn't that what they did on the regame? I think that's what I read. I don't know if it's true. But they said it was the first time that you go into the stadium and you could pick your own seat.
Yes.
And you also
first
had to clean
come,
it.
First serve.
Right?
Yep.
Just do that on Sunday. Say, hey, guys, we're going to have the game. And just
can
be
you imagine
safe.
If you're doing that, though, like how bad people are going to get stampeded?
And they had that. They tried to do that at the Michigan whenever we were having like issues with people not going. They tried to do that with the student section. I can't remember what year that was, if it was the Coca-Cola year or not. But they had like a large trolley and people were just outside just trying to get hammered in the line. And I'm like, guys, you're going to have to use the bathroom. You know they're not letting us in. And like then you're going to be fighting for your spots. And it was just like a mad rush of down like 800 flights of stairs to get down low. But it's like, all right, I get it. In the Buffalo, you're going to clean your seat off. You're not going to go. We're not going to really worry about it because you're going to be too cold. You don't want to be down in the front because the wind and stuff, you're going to be the colder. You want to be kind of packed in. I've been at cold games.
But I think like if I spent an extended amount of time clearing off the seats in the area near where I was going to be sitting, and then like I go to the bathroom or I go to the concession stand, I come back and somebody else is in my seat, they may be getting punched directly in the face.
But I don't think people would move. People are creatures of habit, dude. They're going to go to their spot. It's very unlike people to like want to move out of their ticket. I don't know if I talked about this last year. We went to the bowl game last year. I know we talked about going to the game, my buddy and me. And all around us, empty seats. I'm standing up, right? We're down in the lower section because I'm at the game. I want to stand up and cheer. Some lady behind us calls security on me. And they're like, hey, buddy, you're walking around a little bit. You got to stay right in front of your seat if you want to stand. I'm like, so I can't like go out into the alley a little bit. They're like, no. So what if a handicapped person wanted to go down the steps? I'm like, well, I hope they would be like, excuse me. Like instead of just plowing down the steps. And the guy's like, all right, buddy, we can't really kick you out, but just let you know people are complaining. I'm like, who the hell's complaining? I turn around, it's like this one lady, and she's like, it's me. I'm like, all right, why? There's 50 open seats. Just go sit over there. She's like, this is the seat I paid for. This is the view I want. I'm like, the view you want, you could be 14 rows down and be closer. I didn't move because there's a railing behind us. I was like, I didn't move because I wanted to stand. Like, I was doing it. We got seats so that we could stand. And then she actually just left the game because she didn't want to change her seat. Security's like, you can just get a better seat. Go ahead. Pick one of the ones that's open. We don't care. Like, we don't care. But she was so mad that I wouldn't sit down that she left the game. And the security just shrugged. I'm like, that's the dumbest decision I've ever seen. Like, who could have a better seat, but because they had their own assigned seat mat, they did not want to leave it. That's what would happen if people had their own seats. They're going to clean it off. It's going to be like a piece of them owns that seat. They're not going to try to steal your seat. Plus, they probably would be afraid of getting punched. So the moral of that story, stand your ground. Stand up and cheer loud. Too many people sitting down. It's not a game. Just watch it on TV then. Even at the bar, like I'm walking around, I'm pacing, I'm yelling. People probably are like taking Snapchats of me. Like, this guy looks like he is schizophrenic. Throwing the Michigan championship game? Hell yeah. I was talking mad crap to myself. Like, come on, Blake, one more run, baby. Sealed this game out. And then he never did it for like two quarters. It's like, oh my gosh. So that's what I'd be like at a Bills game. Yelling, talking to people around you, having fun. And if it was in the snow, I wouldn't even care. Because it's only a couple hours. People are making it seem like, oh, if we get out there, we're going to be stuck. Like, yeah, maybe if you don't have good transportation or whatever, and you're driving 8 hours in a snowstorm, maybe it's best for you not to attend. And I think they were doing refunds or whatever. I don't even know what they did ticket-wise. Just have it. Don't care. Steelers fans complaining. Also don't care. Everyone's talking about Rudolph. I knew he would do nothing. Like, are you serious? That was like, what, 21-0, and then the Bills just sat on it? And the Steelers tried to claw it back. It was over. They were never winning that game. And then Pickett didn't come in there. Thank God Matt, his tiny hands didn't touch the ball in that cold. Ball would have been slipping out everywhere. It's not like didn't Pickett fumble and Rudolph threw an interception or something in the end zone. It's like, ah, that doesn't matter. At least he didn't have tiny hands out there flipping a ball around. What were your thoughts on that game? Did you cry?
I just thought it's what we've come to know of as Steelers football, and it's extremely frustrating to watch because every year it feels like they're making progress and they're making adjustments to the roster to put themselves in a position to succeed. And at different points, it feels like it's different stuff. Like for the longest time, it was, they were going with like the most random secondary guys and just getting absolutely scorched in the secondary. And then it was like, they made the trade for Minka and was like, all right, like they're starting to address the issue. And like, you're seeing that they're trying to solve the problem, but at some point they're such a big emphasis on Mike Tomlin never below 500. Like, but he's not doing anything when he gets to the playoffs. I mean, other teams have fired their coaches for less. And I know, you know, granted, a lot of those franchises are continuously in the running for those higher first round draft picks, and they're in these situations. But when you really boil it down, it's like Tomlin had his Super Bowl runs when there was still a core group of guys left over from when Cowher was there. You have guys like Najee Harris now that's coming out and being like, we really don't have any rules. It's just kind of a free-for-all here. And, I mean, for as much as Pickens has been in the media for, like, going crazy and going back through the list of diva receivers at Pittsburgh that rose to stardom and then left and, you know, did their own thing, it's like the window is now to potentially put this together. But I just feel like at this point, it's the offensive play calling. Like, they have two different guys putting the plan together and calling the game. And for as many innovative minds that you're seeing right now, Pittsburgh ain't it.
Pittsburgh, to me, watching them, there's no central like drive to be better. They're just like a mediocre team. It reminds me of like a college program that's kind of like they're getting 10 wins and they're like kind of like Penn State, to be honest, where it's like, yeah, we got our 10. Great for us, buddy. And then they're just complaining about other teams that are like trying to win. And they'll be like, we're held to a higher standard, guys. Well, that'll never be us. We don't need to be doing NIL or like whatever the hot thing is. They that's just their excuse. Like, we'll never do that. We'll never win. And then the Steelers, it's the same thing. Like, gut winning record. Now it's going to come together. I think winning that one wild card Super Bowl kind of poisoned everybody to be like, yeah, I'm just going to go ahead and wait for the Steelers to turn it on. And then they never turn it on. And they're just there. And they're not even winning in the regular season like the Cowboys. Because I think the Cowboys had 12 wins in like three straight seasons now. The Steelers, and I know they're getting bounced early, but the Steelers don't even have the regular season success. Still losing to losers, getting the playoffs, and you know you have no hope. Because like I knew there's no way they're winning that game. People were begging for it to snow just to give them a shot. That's how bad Pittsburgh has gotten. But they have no future. They try to get a new quarterback how many times under Ben? Didn't help them. Every year it's like, got the quarterback of the future. Oh, Ben's not helping him. Oh, they give him in a game. They suck. Oh, get rid of him. All right, well, we got the next one. Got the next one.
But I almost feel like it's to a team's advantage to try to do that and go through that cycle. And I think you saw New England go through that. Like, even when Brady was there, you had Jimmy G come through. You had Matt Castle come through. You had, like, all these other quarterbacks that I feel like you have to be trying to develop the next one while your first string is in place. So that, like, even looking at the quarterback prospects right now, there's not a quarterback that I would draft in the first round that I'd be like, oh yeah, this is definitely day one plug and play starter. Like, I think a lot of these quarterbacks now, because they're transferring around, the schemes are being, like, they're not able to have as much depth to their college playbook. It's taking them longer to learn their NFL ones. It seems like that I feel like there's a steeper learning curve that college quarterbacks have to face now, assimilating to the pro style game. And maybe that's the route that they go. If you take a late round, fourth, fifth round, and you just draft a quarterback that if he doesn't pan out, it was a fourth, fifth round pick, no harm, no foul. But if you do happen to catch that player that maybe helps your be your face of the franchise for a decade or more, you know, you still have you have options.
See, CJ Stroud right now is playing lights out, and everyone's talking about how he was like a sure thing, but no one really thought he was a sure thing. He didn't really show up in the biggest games in college. He didn't ever beat Michigan. Didn't really win in the playoffs. I know they almost beat Georgia, but it's like if he makes one more pass, they do beat him. I know they missed a field goal to lose, so he did almost enough, but he just kept coming up short, and his wide receiver group in college was like the best of all time. So it's like, all right, well, now he's coming in and everyone's making fun of the Bears. Or no, who picked ahead of him? It wasn't the Bears. They had Fields. It was... crap, which guy came first? The Panthers with Bryce Young.
Yeah.
So they're like, down here, everyone's saying, well, should have drafted Stroud, sure thing. It's like, no. He had a roster that was 100% better than everyone else in college. And maybe right now, just having him get hot with like Nico Collins putting up tons of like yards, no one can seems like they can cover him. Maybe that has a little bit to do with it. If you have a guy that can kind of stretch the field like Patrick Mahomes had with Hill, where you can just start to get confidence in the deep ball, opens everything else back up. And I wonder, like with Pittsburgh, it seems like they get guys that are home run threats, and then they're like, but we're not going to use you ever. Ever.
But, you know, you look at, like, what Andy Reid was able to do. He was in Philly for how long and just struggled to get him over the hump. And it took getting canned and going to Kansas City that he was able to work out whatever issues he had.
But look at how the Steelers
the Super Bowl.
Play call, though. They handicapped themselves because... And Andy Reid used to do this at Philly. The only receiver that I remember Philly really opened it up for was T.O. in that one Super Bowl when he went ham. Because like it was like seemed like it was the only guy that they trusted to throw to. And the Steelers are the same way. since Antonio Brown, if you watch like Tyreek Hill when he was with the Chiefs, he was getting a lot of deep passes like over the middle of the field. And that's what we saw with Nico. Like, he wasn't getting, oh, we're only going to take a deep shot if you're running within 6 inches of the sideline, buddy, making sure that if you're not going to catch it, it's going to be out of bounds. Where it's like, we're going to give you deep shots over the middle with CJ Stroud over and over again, and it really takes the top off. Because some of them you're like, well, I can't really bite down on this run or this other tight end coming across because I will get burnt.
Well, and I think you kind of jump to where I'm heading with this, is that you have Andy Reid calling in Kansas City. You had McDaniel with the Dolphins. You have Shanahan with San Francisco, with Baltimore's OC coming in from Georgia. Monken,
yeah.
Like, there's offensive styles that there's some innovation to building on base run plays, screens, like delays and crossings and different things to get guys in space. You see Pittsburgh's like, they still have this remnants of, we want to be a smash mouth team and we're gonna run power football. And by all means, I think that is a good aspect to have, and it's a winning formula. But you have to have some other wrinkles and some answers. And when your offense is just consistently run up the middle, throw a deep pass, throw a screen and punt, it just, they pigeonhole themselves so much that it's like they're playing with one hand tied behind their back. And it's just, it leads to a really boring game as a fan, because you're like, well, if they don't throw this 30-yard touchdown pass, like, then they're not going to have get a first down.
But see, that's the thing with Tampa Bay with Baker last night. He was passing the ball all over the field. Random people that I never heard of making catches. And then everyone kept telling me how bad their run game was. Rashad White had a pretty good game, and I thought, this is like, has to be painful for people, like in Cleveland, when even with Flacco, they couldn't do anything against Houston of all teams. And I know that maybe Houston just had their number for that one game, but watching Baker, oh, we know you took us to the AFC Championship game. Sorry, buddy, you're not the future. We're going to trade our whole future for this other guy. Oh, didn't work out, huh? Oh, we'll bring in Joe Flacco. Maybe he'll save us. And everyone's on the Flacco hype train. Meanwhile, Baker's still alive. He's the only one. And I remember people joking about Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh get Baker real cheap. It's like, maybe you should have. Maybe you should have. Because I was high on Baker. I've been saying it. I'm waiting for him to kind of take over. And if he makes it all the way to the NFC Championship game, then I think people have to talk about him maybe being a little bit, like, decent. Everyone's kind of like, well, the team's really built for him. It's like, who? Like, Tom Brady's not there. And Baker learned enough from him.
Because they have five receivers like he had at Oklahoma, and he can just run around.
Well, that's why he's passing. Like, their leading receiver was Kate Otten. No one had over 100 yards. Where the Eagles had the opposite, where they're like, Devonta Smith, you're getting all of our passes. We're not throwing to anybody else. Except for
it was like early in the game, and he threw a perfect pass and went right through Mike Evans' hands. I was like, oh, he's in playoff form, just dropping wide open touchdown pass. Like,
I know, and then they always put the graphics up about how great he is for them. I was just shaking my head. I thought, oh my god.
Oh, that just absolutely infuriates me. I'm like, why do we keep hyping him up? Every game that I've watched of him, he drops at least five passes.
He only had three catches. He did have seven targets last night. And I thought, that's what you need. The hype is what gets people off. Then you just check down to the tight end, and that's it. That's the game. Run it in the middle. He breaks a couple tackles or whatever. And then Baker ran for only 16 yards. He did two scrambles. That was it. But the Eagles fell apart. the Eagles were my pick to win the Super Bowl, and they were in top form until about a couple weeks ago when AJ Brown started complaining. And it's very clear. I know he didn't play because he's hurt, right? It fractured the locker room. So much so that Kelsey's brother, whatever his name is, he's retiring, they said.
Yep.
He's like, I'm giving up. I don't need to be a part of this. It's like you have a team that was so close, you would think that they would want to do like a revenge tour, do something to like really get everyone hyped together. And they're like, nah, let's blow it apart. I watched Julio Jones get killed on that one reception. I was like, I don't even know he was still with them. So Eagles, Steelers, both Pennsylvania teams out of the playoffs. Detroit's moving on. We talked about that, but now they have to play Baker. So Detroit, Tampa Bay, who do you have in that one and why?
I just want to see Detroit win. Just because Campbell's doing all the things that I think Pittsburgh could have done and just choose not to.
And they could. I mean, he's basically just teaching the guys to be hard-nosed. Steelers used to be that. Now they've reverted to, oh, it's Steelers' way. Steelers' way. We're, you know, doing it, hyping it in, you know. That's how we do things around here. What are the next games? Is it... What even is it? Is it the... I know the Packers play the Niners. So for that one, who do you have?
I'm going to go with the Niners. Just go with that offensive firepower.
See, I saw some stats where if a team comes out on fire in the first round that's a low seed, they usually choke the next game. But I don't think the Packers should have been a super low seed because they hamstring themselves during the regular season with their play calling. So honestly, they should have easily been a 10-win team, if not 11 or 12, and instead they're sitting at 9-8. Now, they have a poor road record, which is why I would pick the 49ers, but just for the sake of it, I'm going to keep rolling with the Packers. I think that if they come out on fire, it's going to be awesome. The key X factor is McCaffrey. Dinged up McCaffrey, where he barely plays, or are we going to get fantasy champion McCaffrey? What do you think?
I think you get the healthy one.
Because that's the one, that's the key. If he plays and he's healthy, the Niners are basically unstoppable, at least for the NFC side of things, I think. I think a Niners-Lions championship game would be great. They definitely don't want a Packers-Bucks championship game, which would just be hilarious, right? Jordan Love versus Baker Mayfield. I think if you're a Lions fan, you also don't want to see the Packers. Because could you imagine Lions getting so close and then, oh, here's Packers with their new quarterback going to the Super Bowl. I think that would be the one that would be hard to swallow. Everyone's celebrating the Lions win. But realistically, how this weekend goes plays into account how the season, like how it ends. How does it feel for the Lions? Because, like, same for Michigan. If Michigan would have lost to Washington, knowing how close they were to a championship, even though they beat Bama, beat Ohio State, it's almost like the loss to TCU last year. Like, we lost a team we shouldn't have lost to. If the Lions lose to the Bucs or lose to the Packers, you have to think they blew it. Not saying they should be shooing for the Super Bowl on that side, but they're one of only, what, three teams left that have had 12 or more wins. It's the Lions, Niners, and then, of course, the Ravens with 13. So the Lions could potentially be a favorite the rest of the way. They're a 6.5 spread against the Bucs. And the Bucs are the same thing as the Packers. Historically, if a team plays out of their mind and upsets a big seed, they're usually content with that, and the next round they lose. I feel like the Buccaneers have a better chance of that happening. Just because it seems like some of their guys, like you brought up Mike Evans, they just seem like they don't care. And they've already won a Super Bowl with Tom Brady. So I feel like it's going to be hard for Baker Mayfield to pump those guys up. But maybe I'm wrong. The Packers are so young that you don't know how they're going to react, right? They're the youngest team in the NFL. Bucks have a bunch of savvy vets that could just be packing it in. On the AFC side, though, Ravens and Texans. I was leaning towards the Ravens going all the way. But as you brought up earlier about the Cowboys DC interviewing, there, Mike McDonald, Michigan's old DC, is the Ravens DC now. He's been interviewing, and he's a favorite for a couple jobs right now. So is he really going to be prepared to stop CJ Stroud? Now, granted, I did bring up the Michigan thing because he stopped them in college. So does he kind of already have an inside track there? What do you think?
I'm leaning more towards Baltimore just because home field advantage, and I feel like I don't see them choking this away, because I feel like compared to other Baltimore teams of the past, like, they're missing their tight end, but I feel like there's enough weapons around Lamar Jackson that he's not in this major panic right now, where it's not like teams can just tee off exclusively on him.
Destiny states that a Ravens-Lions Super Bowl, where after Michigan won the national championship, if a Harbaugh stops Detroit from winning the Super Bowl, the fans will be conflicted, man. Right?
I would like to see a Buffalo-Detroit Super Bowl.
You know what, the Ravens to make it? I feel like the Ravens are the team of destiny this year, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, Buffalo-Detroit is who I want. That way, either team... they've never won the Super Bowl, and I can be okay with it.
Texans haven't won it. Texans has never been there. Same with the Lions. You could have Lions.
Yeah, but they're new. They have time.
The Bills have been there, Matt. They had their chances.
They were so close, too.
I know. They are playing the Chiefs. Is that who you're picking, the Bills?
Yeah, I'm going Bills.
It's the first time they said Mahomes is on the road in the playoffs. So
and the Bills Mafia. I've loved watching all the memes of, like, when Taylor Swift walks through Buffalo parking lot with drunkards diving through tables on fire.
They had that one where they showed someone, like, in a hotel room that was, like, in Buffalo. It's, like, all torn apart, and they're like, I wonder what Taylor Swift's face will be like when she walks into her luxury hotel. That reminds me, I went to a concert upstate New York and get into our hotel. Dude, they had mirrors on the roof and on the side because we were like, yeah, we'll get the upgraded room. I'm like, this is the upgrade? Mirrors everywhere? Are you sure there's not cameras in these mirrors? Good Lord. So that'd be funny if she did the same thing. She's like, I'll get the luxury suite. And it's just a bunch of, like, mirrors and stuff everywhere. Like, oh, you can watch yourself. Awesome. I feel like I don't want the Chiefs to win. I'm tired of them. I would like to see the Bills. Watching them lose so many Super Bowls growing up, that always stuck with me, where I felt like they deserved a Super Bowl win. And I always liked playing as them on Madden because their team always sucked. And it was kind of like, oh yeah, this is like taking the lesser team in NCAA football and trying to build them into a powerhouse. I can do that with the Bills and Madden.
Absolutely. Well, and even looking at the style of Pittsburgh's offense, where, you know, whether it was Pickett or Rudolph, they're standing 7-8 yards behind the center, and they're in the gun, and they're throwing it or they're handing it off, and you know exactly where it's going to be. Like, Buffalo's moving Josh Allen around. He's running some design quarterback stuff. Like, there weren't a lot of tee off and blister him stuff. Like, they were protecting him on some of the runs and rollouts, but it's like, move the pocket, move him in space, give him opportunities to let guys get downfield and not be predictable. And it was such a contrast in watching what Pittsburgh was trying to do and skipping the ball in the dirt and throwing it out of bounds. And it was like, Buffalo reminded me of how a team can operate as an offense.
So that's the one thing that I think people need to see, the different offensive stuff. They see the Chiefs and they're like, oh, he's always cooking back there, doing something different. running around, throwing the ball, where it seems like with Kelce dropping 100 passes a game because he's distracted, it's perfect to get some new teams in there. Get the Bills in there. The Texans, I think, would be a crazy upset. But the Bills, Chiefs, Bills are the favorites, so it wouldn't even be an upset. I feel like the Chiefs are going to win, though, so I'm going to have to stick with them. As much as I hate it, I'm thinking, did I even pick a Lions, Bucks pick? I'm thinking it would be Chiefs, Lions, Ravens, and I'll stay with my Packers. Which would be a crazy next weekend, because Lions, Packers would be a rivalry game for the championship. That would be hyped up. And then Ravens, Chiefs will be hyped up just because the Ravens are the best team. And so will Patrick Mahomes get it? But we'll see what happens. I hope that if some of the teams I don't pick win, that they're new. I don't really like the idea of CJ Stroud winning a Super Bowl, though. He can have success. But Tom Brady is one big thing that always hurts Ohio State because none of their guys have performed in the NFL at quarterback. Even though it hasn't stopped recruiting at all. As I transition into college stuff, I know the recruiting stuff has been getting a little bit out of control. Because on one hand, Florida State got their allegations or whatever. What was that? They just magically have a hidden investigation going. No one from their conference leaked it to the media and had like a bunch of coaches on a voice call together where they're like, hey, we think you should suspend the coach. And then the conference commissioner steps in and they suspend the coach for 3 games in the middle of the year. That doesn't happen in the ACC.
Well, no, we'll take your allegations and we'll raise you, because the guy that did it was the former athletic director that pushed out Jimbo Fisher, said we had no money, hired Willie Taggart, like set the program back for a long time, and then joined the NCAA and was like, ha ha, gotcha.
So he's like the Jim Stapleton of Florida State.
He was like, hey, you're trying to leave and break your grant of rights and dissolve the ACC and hurt ESPN? Gotcha.
But they did it in secret. It's like, hey, gotcha, guys. Right here, just take your penalty. And they're like, all right. And the weird thing is, it's the same thing that Michigan was accused of, right? Or something similar to the cheeseburger thing.
Yeah.
Which they gave your guy 3 games. Harbaugh tried to go for 3 games, and they were like, no way, not harsh enough, buddy. Or he wanted 4, and they were like, no, you need more. So then he did 3 as a compromise. So it's funny now that Florida State's guy just gets 3, and it's like the precedent's been set. I've already seen that argued from the Michigan side, where it's like, well, the exact same thing with Harbaugh for the cheeseburgers. They're going to try to say about lying, but in the actual Florida State thing, they said that the guy lied. But based on circumstances, they let that slide. So I feel like they're not going to let Harbaugh get away with it. Like, they have to kind of just let him go for that one. I feel like the Connor Stallions thing, as I make fun of like Jim Stapleton being the Michigan boogeyman, because I've seen his name brought up at least 10 times today about the Harbaugh contract negotiations.
But wait a minute. You can get drunk. And drive recruits all around campus and crash and kill people. And they're like, it just means more.
Matt, respect the family in the sad time.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing that I don't understand is how can you, and you know that there have been all these things, and you don't even pay it any mind other than respect the families during their hardship. But in an era now where everybody's paying players, like, how are you trying to police this? Or, like, where is the line where it's now too much?
Well, how are they not caring about Miami when they're just, like, blatantly saying who they're paying? And then the guy's like, I'm going to go to the NFL. So they're like, we're going to pay 5 other guys. And then finally it circles back. They're like, yeah, well, we'll pay the original guy. It's like, they know they're paying. It's just kind of crazy. Same with like Georgia, Ohio State, Texas is doing like Lamborghini shows where people get like Lamborghinis for showing up. But it's like, all right, awesome. Is it helping you win games? Like, nah, not really. Still choking against a school like Washington in the playoffs. Probably would have been a better game against Michigan. I thought it was a joke that people were like, Texas, Washington, real national championship. And it's like, you didn't watch any Michigan games, have you? No, hell no. We don't need to. Don't need to. High-powered offense like Texas. Texas is back, baby. Matthew McConaughey was there. Told us. We listen to Hollywood guys all the time. They're always great. All we know is Texas is back. They're going to be the top team. And it's like, all right. Keep paying for guys. Don't have, like, at least have mercenaries, it seems like. Ohio State getting guys from, like, Ole Miss that Lane Kiffin, like, threw under the bus after hinting that the guy was looking for a bigger bag. And magically, Ohio State just gets him, like, the next day. So it's like, Ohio State probably offered him. Went back to Ole Miss, and they're like, get lost, buddy. We don't care. And he went and signed with Ohio State. Same with the Georgia thing. That was clearly a setup. I read the Florida State allegation. The guy entered the portal almost like a spy. Like, Georgia told him, hey, we need to figure out how much Florida State's offering because they're getting a lot of guys recently. I need you to go ahead and enter the portal. Go take a visit there. Immediately he takes the visit, comes back, withdraws from the portal, and then reports Florida State to the NCAA. So they 100% did that on purpose. Michigan, in the Connor Stallions document, they alleged Ohio State did something similar, where a recruit pretended he was like down between Ohio State and Michigan, and reportedly like brought... like his dad came and was like filming a bunch of like practices and stuff. Big Ohio State fan. And then magically went back to Ohio State with all that footage. And they're like, what the hell? Like, you can just do that? Like, fake commit and then flip to the school? So that was one of the things where Connor Stallions and his like past manifesto said that they knew, they were suspicious that Ohio State was sending recruits up there to get footage, and like, so when they would come, they would use like fake signals, and then when the guys would decommit and go back to Ohio State, they were bringing like bad intel, and they said that that's why Ryan Day was like so upset about it. Like, they knew that one of the athletes or someone that moved, or probably one of the past coaches, had access to their Google Drive, so he just filled it with a bunch of fake signs, and that's probably how Michigan got the long touchdown runs and the long scoring drives against CJ Stroud. Remember? Everyone's like, asterisk, you can't have that many big plays in a game. I would laugh if that was the real reason why, is because Michigan had like this Marine guy putting fake signals everywhere for recruits and people to steal. And then using them in game to break long touchdowns. Because that's the game, 2021 is the first time, or no, it wasn't 21, it was 2022, where Ryan Day said he changed all the signs up. Right, and that's the game where CJ Stroud and Ohio State looked better. It was in the shoe, and all Michigan's scoring plays were like long, wide open touchdowns, like Donovan Edwards just running through an all out blitz for touchdown, like 80 yards, 85 yards, whatever. Then I think the tight end broke free wide open. And if you told me, hey, they had the wrong signs, I would believe it. I'd 100% believe it. But how could Georgia just send a guy on a fake recruiting trip, figure out how much they're paying, and then report it? And how often, how much is that going on? Because you got a guy that's loyal. There's no way the player can get in trouble. Hey, enter the portal real quick and go see it. I guarantee that's happening.
But if you're like, what I don't understand is if you're meeting with one of the NIL collectives and they're not, they're just saying, if you commit, this is a part of a package for you.
I don't think Georgia
sanctioned.
Georgia didn't. Well, the only reason they got sanctioned is because the coach drove him to meet to the collective. It wasn't because they offered him. I guarantee that Georgia sent him there to figure out how much the collective was paying. so that they knew when they reached out, like when Nick Saban retired and Florida State was getting all these Bama commits. And I know this happened before. Like, was it last year or was it this December?
It's ongoing, buddy.
Well, see, that's what I'm wondering. Like, if Georgia saw Florida State winning the portal and they said, hey, got one of our guys, we need to send him over there and see how much they're offering because they're winning, right? That's the only way they're going to know is if another player goes and gets it, because that's what I keep hearing. It's like word of mouth. Players know what schools are paying, and that's why that's the Michigan excuse. Oh, yeah, we're not going to have boosters that want to outpay like all these other schools. It's like, I'm pretty sure it has to do with Harbaugh never committing to the school and never doing recruiting. He's just like out there going out on NFL hires and like trying to get the contract to say, we're going to have my buyout only decrease or increase after February 15th when the NFL hiring's done. It's like little weird things like that just doesn't make sense. And I remember last year when I said, I don't think like Harbaugh's like really into like interviewing for the NFL, and he went to the Vikings like he thought he had the job or whatever, and then he had like a lot of people from the Vikings organization was like, that's the weirdest interview we've ever had. Like they'd ask him like legit questions and he thinks they're joking, and he'd be like saying weird stuff when they're like, no, we really need to interview you, buddy. You're choking in all the big games. This year it seems like he's gonna come in and be like, national champ, don't need to interview. And I wonder if it's going to backfire again. Because I don't even know if he really wants any of these jobs. All of his family is in Michigan. His dad's how old?
But I think when you look at some of these jobs, like he's smart enough to understand that I don't think that he would do this, but realistically, he could just hang out at Michigan at this point for at least 3 years and have total immunity.
Well, he's 60 now. And that's kind of what he's been doing. I said he needed to do that a while ago. It seems like when they started winning is when he kind of stepped back. He has his fingerprint on the offense, but they're still doing a lot of trick plays and stuff that he never really like kind of went through, you know? And the defense, he's not as involved at all anymore. He's kind of just turned it over to like the Baltimore, where Michigan's defensive coaches are working with the Ravens' defensive coaches. And they're both running the same system that no other team runs, where they have guys flexing in, rotating in like hockey lines, where Michigan brings an entire defensive line in, where after guys said that they were coming back, I was surprised how many like big time players Michigan has on defense back, even though they're losing a bunch, because it rotates so much, the defense is still going to be loaded. Offense, same thing with the offensive line. They're rotating everybody through, where now this year, I read the thing about Ohio State like laughing at Michigan saying that they're going to lose like 20 seniors or something. Their entire offensive line next year is going to be like, I think four of them are seniors. It's like, if you're rotating everybody in, then you're just going to have a bunch of older guys at all time. So the only weakness Michigan really has right as of right now is quarterbacking, because I think Tuttle, the backup, got denied for his waiver. And then there was rumors that Tua's brother wanted to come to Michigan, and he got denied because he was tied to Miami. Then Miami offered Ward again, and he withdrew. So then they were saying that Tua's brother was going to transfer to Michigan, and his waiver got denied. So, of course, the two quarterbacks that Michigan was relying on both get denied, of course. But you never know. We never know what offense they're even going to run. Heck, Harbaugh could leave and they could go to like a heavy run spread like Urban Meyer, like what you saw under Cam Newton with Alex Orji. Harbaugh never let him pass the ball. Right. That's why I joke with you that if everyone's complaining about Alabama guys getting poached, DeBoer, his offense is accurate passing, like Mike Leach. There's no way Milroe's going to be quarterback in that system without making modifications. So I was saying, like, if Michigan just brought in Milroe and had Orji as the backup, where you have two running quarterback type deals, power run, it would almost be unstoppable. They could keep doing what they wanted to do, eat the clock. You have big tight ends and then receivers that just stretch the field or whatever. They have some fast guys. Seems like all that Michigan's been getting is burners. Like, remember Morris that outran all the Alabama DBs? He's back next year. So, like, they could really be one of the most feared power run teams that they brought in Milroe. I don't think it will happen, but that would be awesome.
I love the hat dance that went on after Saban retired. And it was like, Mike Norvell would be a great fit at Alabama. Like, how do you justify he wasn't good enough to coach in the college football playoff, but suddenly he's the perfect guy to take over? Like, could barely coach at Florida State, but oh yeah, he's definitely the man now at Alabama.
That's why I think it's insane. There's no way that Norvell or Dan Lanning were the first pick for Alabama's job. There's no way. DeBoer was Michigan's number one choice last year when Harbaugh was supposed to go to the Vikings. I kept hearing his name being brought up. And I'll be honest, I was skeptical. I don't even know if we talked about it on the show. Because his years at Fresno State, he was like 12-9 or something. And I thought, oh, really? Yeah, he turned Washington around, but it's Washington. Like, how do I know that they just didn't have super seniors last year like TCU? Then this year, they go crazy. And remember, Alabama and Michigan were fighting over Rich Rod back in the day. They're very much aligned on football coaching. I guarantee you that DeBoer was their top pick. And I've heard some rumors that they might have gave him a head nod before the national championship game. And I wonder if that was in his head a little bit. That's what some of the Washington fans are kind of upset about, because Nick Saban was apparently going back and forth on it for like a week. There's no way where he came back and said, guys, I might retire for real, that they didn't start looking for a new coach the previous week. Because they had him there the next day. Remember, the same day, everyone was like, Dan Lanning's supposed to be there right now. And then next thing you know, he's not there. The only coach that was actively there was DeBoer. So I guarantee he was the first pick. It's almost like the joke with James Franklin. So they put out the coaching like odds. First tweet, it's like Dan Lanning, Norvell, DeBoer, and who else did they have? Sarkisian. Sarkisian was never contacted.
Well, Sarkisian and Lane, like, I think almost all of them were.
Lane was probably picked number two.
But I think, like, you look at Jimmy Sexton, he's the agent for all of them. So, I mean, because they weren't on campus doesn't mean that he wasn't just negotiating on behalf of all of them.
Well, I'm sure he brought it up because that was what was making me laugh. They put the first tweet out with all the guys that were kind of connected to Bama, and then right after they corrected it and added James Franklin. I sent it to my Penn State buddies. I'm like, look, here you go. Agent doing work, baby. And they're like, please hire James Franklin. I'm like, for them to even get that far on the list, because if I'm with Bama, my first pick would have been DeBoer. I think Kiffin would have been the number two. Just because you need someone that's going to come into the NIL era. That's what Nick Saban didn't want to do. You'll never convince me, and I've seen a lot of other people make the same argument, but I've felt this way for a while. Nick Saban's only had continued success because of recruiting. He had the number one class how many years in a row? And he's only had, like, what, one or two undefeated seasons? How is that possible? How are you losing to, like, A&M, like Tennessee and South Carolina, like, when you have the number one school all the time? Ohio State doesn't even, I mean, I guess with Urban they did, like losing to Purdue and things like that, but Ryan Day hasn't lost to schools like that. He's only lost to playoff teams. There's no reason that with Alabama recruiting as much as Ohio State does, that they should have been losing to any other schools other than Georgia. Facts. There's no way. And Nick Saban has been doing it for like however many years. So now that it's getting really evened out with players transferring, NIL down, he had to get out. He had to get out because it's going to hurt his legacy if he does the Joe Paterno and Bobby Bowden nosedive near the end, where it's like hovering around 8-win seasons or whatever. They would have been up in arms. Now he can walk away, keep him. He was at the meetings. Some of their coaches were going to leave, and he magically showed up at the meetings, and now they're not going to Georgia and stuff. They're big-time recruiters because he doesn't want to hurt his legacy. I think they know there's going to be a transition with the board. That's why I think the Milrow thing, it might not happen yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't enter the portal like around spring or whatever. Because they're going to bring their guy, and he brought his own offensive coordinator. Domino started falling. Fish was hired by Washington. And he's an up-and-comer. That actually hurts your Florida Gators, your so-called rivals over there. Because I think he went to Florida or something. So they've been having their eye on him for a while. He was great at Michigan. I always brought him up. And he turned Arizona around. It took him a while. But now they're saying with him going there, it's going to be hard for Florida to like hire him because it's going to be kind of off cycle.
Well, it didn't have to take him that long because Rich Rod was there. So he already had a foundation.
And he's a great coach, you know. Just imagine if DeBoer brought Rich Rod in to run the offense. It'd be great. He would be great with Milrow, dude.
Yeah.
Then just fire him after. Like, but, hey, we're only here with the players. They've got to get someone else in here.
And they would, the Alabama fans would be encouraging of Rich Rod, like berating everyone.
Well, it's like Oregon State's coach. He went to Michigan State, and then after Washington opened up, he put out the thing that he really regretted his decision. And it would have been funny if he just was like, yeah, you know what, I am going to go back to Washington. I don't want to be here. But if you're like a Michigan State guy, you have to be like, what the heck? What kind of jerk says that about our school? He really regrets that he took the job. Bummer. And maybe it's a fake quote, but it seemed like it was real because it like came from some of the media guys that I saw. So that's my college football roundup. A lot of tampering in the portal, but I don't care about that. The Harbaugh thing, again, might be for real. Maybe he's trying to force his hand with Michigan higher-ups.
I gotta give Mike Norvell a lot of credit because he's gone this offseason perfectly. Oh, you want to leave us out of the playoffs? That's fine. We'll just go look at all of the teams who are in the playoffs, and we'll just cherry-pick players off your roster. We'll have a playoff team by having a playoff team.
But see, that's why he should never have played that bowl game. Because they could have been 13-0, bringing in a bunch of transfers. The hype would be off the roof. I think there's still going to be a sour taste in everyone's mouth next year when they're like, eh, they got killed by 60.
But you know what? The only people that are saying that are people that don't matter. Because the people that have watched any of their games understand that that's a completely different team with those opt-out guys opting in for something that was meaningful. And for as many guys that they have leaving, they're replacing with – it's not like they're taking guys from DeVry. Like they're pulling from highly, highly ranked guys that now suddenly have lower ranked star value because they're no longer in the SEC. So – are dealing with that aspect, but I mean, it's to me, Norvell has really done well at just getting into the portal, getting guys that he needs to address weak areas, and he has guys leaving, and now you're seeing the cycle where he's starting to hit his stride, and I think it's shifting more with the portal of you're not going to have your top schools hoarding 3-4 of the top quarterback prospects and letting them duel it out. And you may sign. And I think this is where I like the position that Norvell took a couple years ago. He's like, we want to build relationships with these players. And if they choose to go to us, great. If they don't, then so be it. Because what's happening is you're getting this boomerang effect that they're going to these other programs. They're going to pay out potentially more in NIL off the bat. And then it's like they're not cracking the starting roster, hit the portal, bounce over, and then they're seeing immediate playing time, and they're seeing success.
But now with the expanded playoff, it's going to be pressure on him to actually have that success turn into postseason success. And it's not only him. There's going to be a lot of coaches now where that's going to be the barometer. beating the rival isn't going to matter if you bounce in the first round, kind of like we talked about with the Cowboys. Awesome.
But I think there's going to be a grace period with the playoff, that if you're in that discussion to be in the playoffs and you're qualifying for that, and you're at least getting a bid to participate, I think that's going to be meaningful for programs that at least just to be able to say, because it's the same argument that we're having now with four teams. Like, you can negatively spin it to Florida State that, well, you're going to an ACC school, you don't have a chance of getting into the playoffs. Look at what they just did. They went undefeated and couldn't get in. You know, whereas with the 12-team format now, if you go undefeated, you're gonna have an opportunity to get your foot in the door, and you can say, hey, you can come here, you can win, and you're gonna be a playoff team, and then build off of that.
And that's where I think a lot of the people are getting down on, like, the Big 12, thinking that they have no chance because they haven't, like, historically had teams that have been close. But with the TCU win over Michigan, like, who knows if Michigan would have pulled that out, how differently the title game would have went. And if Michigan wins a close one and then loses to Georgia in a close one, a lot of people would think that TCU is a lot closer. Where watching them get killed, it's like, oh, yeah, no respect for the Big 12. Texas, Oklahoma losing, no respect. So now they have a chance to actually prove it on the field, even though they might only get one or two teams in. That team has to show up and win the game. If they just end up being body bag games for the Power 2 or whatever they're calling them, then that's going to be an issue down the line. And heck, they're saying that Florida State might even announce a move sooner rather than later. So by the time summer rolls around, we might be talking about Florida State in the SEC or the Big Ten and trying to put it out. The last thing I had for the final bell is I put out a tweet. I put together the map of just the TV viewing area where the Big Ten right now is in a bigger footprint than the SEC. Which backs up my claims of saying that the Big Ten is going to be in the power move. But SEC got hitched to ESPN. The Big Ten has three TV networks. So you could say the TV doesn't matter, but has more population in the states that their schools are in. And I'm not even counting ones that are kind of in between. Like, I don't think I counted New York or whatever. Maybe I did. But you have, what, SEC, all of the South kind of boxed in. You can see the map how the Big Ten's kind of taken over the country. If they just skip the connecting schools and say, hey, we're going to add a Florida State, that cuts deep into the SEC of having, right now, they don't touch those conferences, which is why Florida State needs to make a move now. They don't want to wait and have the SEC just merge with the Big Ten and then be left out. Because it kind of lines up perfectly to make an American conference the way it's set up right now. But you need to have Florida State get in and then keep the power in the Big Ten to where they start poaching SEC schools down the line, instead of having, like, it's going to be crazy if Mississippi State gets a seat at the table and a school like Florida State doesn't. So they have to make the move now, and that's my prediction. I think we'll figure out something soon, definitely by summer. But that's my final thought. You have anything you want for the final bell?
Well, just continuing on that, I do think that with the legislators getting involved, the answer is going to come sooner rather than later. And with the stuff that I'm seeing, I feel like the ACC is in a really tight spot, because they don't want to get to where there's a discovery and they really start digging into all the corrupt things that were going on behind the scenes with the ACC and that Raycom deal that, I mean, you could just say that it was a blatant nepotism move. Like, I don't think that they really want to go into those decisions, because when you start looking at it, it's like, you're not acting in the best interest of the conference when you're pigeonholing it and saying you have to also include this crappy side deal into any discussion. Like, we have to have Raycom. Like, why would that be the deal breaker in this if it didn't have anything other than you know, your son's role is in that broadcasting network.
Well, see, that's where I think the SEC is going to be regretting the decision to just go with ESPN. Going with ESPN killed the ACC. Go having the SEC come down and say, well, we only are on ESPN now, when they used to be split with CBS, and you could have had a pure power move where it was CBS and ESPN versus NBC and Fox for the Big Ten. Now it's all three of them against the SEC. I have a hard time believing that ESPN is going to pony up for the next one unless they sell the rights to like CBS. But I'm hoping that if the Big Ten nabs like a Florida State now and really has the television content and the viewership, because like we've seen the Michigan numbers through the roof, that they can say, hey, CBS, here's a Michigan-Florida State game, or do you really want to be showing like South Carolina play Missouri? Like at some point you have to make the decision, because I'm sure ESPN is not going to give up the top games to CBS anymore. Otherwise they wouldn't have paid that big chunk. And pretty soon there's going to be no more bidders, but
yeah,
we'll see how it changes, because like some of the media stuff will come out this summer, and we're going to definitely hear more soon, because with the NIL stuff, they've already started to put a number on it where if the big networks like the Big Ten has talked about trying to just do a base salary, and I think the TV, the research that I saw made it seem like they could get $70,000 a year per player. There's no way that like one of the quotes is like a guy calling out Baylor for, I think, like $30,000 right now for like a player. Baylor's not going to be able to keep up if like Rutgers is offering $70,000. And it's like, hey, you can go to Baylor and hopefully get other NIL deals, but your base salary is only going to be $30,000. And it's like, I just go to the Big Ten. I don't even have to try for NIL stuff. I can just focus on playing. And then like if I hit it cool, like big time like Michigan's guys did, like Blake Corum, the NIL stuff will come after. And then that's it. Don't worry about having to get that money because it's already guaranteed, basically, with the scholarship. So we'll see. Big playoff games coming up. So thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.